Gradually, their mood lifted as they walked along the beach in Malibu and watched all the millionaires in their chic shanty huts, carefully keeping an eye on each other to check how rich they were each getting. Their mood lifted further as the sun began to move down the western half of the sky, and by the time they were back in their rattling car and driving towards a sunset that no one of any sensibility would dream of building a city like Los Angeles in front of, they were suddenly feeling astonishingly and irrationally happy, and didn't even mind that the terrible old car radio would only play two stations, and those simultaneously. So what, they were both playing good rock and roll. "I know that he'll be able to help us," said Fenchurch determinedly. "I know he will. What's his name again that he likes to be called?"
"Wonko the Sane."
"I know that he will be able to help us." Arthur wondered if he would, and hoped that he would, and hoped that what Fenchurch had lost could be found here, on this earth, whatever this earth might prove to be. He hoped, as he had hoped continually and fervently since the time they had talked together on the banks of the Serpentine, that he would not be called upon to try and remember something that he had very firmly and deliberately buried in the furthest recesses of his memory, where he hoped it would cease to nag at him. In Santa Barbara, they stopped at a fish restaurant in what seemed to be a converted warehouse. Fenchurch had red mullet and said it was delicious. Arthur had a swordfish steak and said it made him angry. He grabbed a passing waitress by the arm and berated her. "Why is this fish so bloody good?" he demanded angrily. "Please excuse my friend," said Fenchurch to the startled waitress. "I think he's having a nice day at last." Chapter 31. If you took a couple of David Bowies and stuck one of the David Bowies on top of the other David Bowie, and then attached another David Bowie to the end of each of the arms of the upper of the first two David Bowies, and wrapped the whole business up in a dirty beach robe, you would then have something which didn't exactly look like John Watson, but which those who knew him would find hauntingly familiar. He was tall and he gangled. When he sat in his deck chair, gazing at the Pacific, not so much with any kind of wild surmise any longer, as with a peaceful, deep dejection, it was a little difficult to tell exactly where the deck chair ended and he began, and you would hesitate to put your hand on, say, his forearm, in case the whole structure suddenly collapsed with a snap and took your thumb off. But his smile, when he turned it on you, was quite remarkable. It seemed to be composed of all the worst things that life can do to you, but which, when he briefly reassembled them in that particular order on his face, made you suddenly feel, "Oh, well, that's all right, then." When he spoke, you were glad that he used the smile that made you feel like that pretty often. "Oh, yes," he said, "they come and see me. They sit right here. They sit right here where you're sitting." He was talking of the angels with the golden beards and green wings and Dr. Skull's sandals. "They eat nachos, which they say they can't get where they come from. They do a lot of coke and are very wonderful about a whole range of things."
"Do they?" said Arthur. "Are they? When is this, then? When do they come?"
He gazed out at the Pacific as well. There were little sandpipers running along the margin of the shore, which seemed to have this problem. They needed to find their food in the sand which a wave had just washed over, but they couldn't bear to get their feet wet. To deal with this problem, they ran with an odd kind of movement, as if they'd been constructed by someone very clever in Switzerland. Fenchurch was sitting on the sand, idly drawing patterns in it with her fingers.
"Weekends, mostly," said Wonko the Sane, "on little scooters. They are great machines."
He smiled.
"I see," said Arthur, "I see."
A tiny cough from Fenchurch attracted his attention, and he looked round at her. She had scratched a little stick-figure drawing in the sand of the two of them in the clouds. For a moment he thought she was trying to get him excited. Then he realized that she was rebuking him. "Who are we," she was saying, "to say that he's mad?" His house was certainly peculiar, and since this is the first thing that Fenchurch and Arthur had encountered, it would help to know what it was like. What it was like was this. It was inside out. Actually inside out, to the extent that they had to park on the carpet. All along what one would normally call the outer wall, which was decorated in a tasteful interior-designed pink, were bookshelves. Also a couple of those odd three-legged tables with semicircular tops, which stand in such a way as to suggest that someone had just dropped the wall straight through them. And pictures, which were clearly designed to soothe. Where it got really odd was the roof.
It folded back on itself like something that Moritzy Escher, had he been given to Hard Nights on the Town, which it is no part of this narrative's purpose to suggest was the case, though it's sometimes hard looking at his pictures, particularly the ones with all the awkward steps, not to wonder, might have dreamt up after having been on one. For the little chandeliers, which should have been hanging inside, were on the outside, pointing up.